Southern California Live with Wendell. How are you? Good to see you again, although I can't see you because I'm on the radio and you can't see me either, which, believe me, is mutually beneficial. Joining us for the next... That's true. Joining us for the next hour is Mr. Johnny Venom. He is a philosopher and trader, not traitor, trader from Chicago, Illinois. He is... graciously consented to allow us to burn up an hour of his precious time, which he could be spent otherwise watching Chicago teams humiliate themselves in various sports. That was pretty nasty, wasn't it?
Oh, don't get me started.
Okay.
Don't get me started. It's just, yeah, I had to hang my head in shame.
Well, Cubbies could be headed to the World Series this year, though.
That'd be nice. That'd be way to be even better.
Yeah.
I listen, even if he makes this, we're still of the psyche, the damaged psyche of, hey, we'll still be happy if we make it to the series.
You won one already. The curse
yeah,
is gone. The curse has ended. You know, you...
Well, who do you think the other team's going to be?
Red
really
Sox.
Quick.
Boston.
Red Sox.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm not entirely sure that it's going to be. I think the Dodgers are on fire right now. They're finally starting to congeal, as is Atlanta. And I think those are your main concerns. However, a baseball program this is not. It is an informative program. Before we get into the total heart of the matter, as it were, you know, my son asked me the other day, we're driving along, and he says out of nowhere, do you think that Musk's idea of this tunnel to Dodger Stadium for a dollar, it can be built in a year and it's ever going to happen? And I said, I don't know. I said, I think that he operates under a lot of delusions. I know that almost no project ever comes in on time in Los Angeles. Why would this one be any different? And to be perfectly honest with you, the most effective way of alleviating and allaying traffic to Dodger Stadium, theoretically, wouldn't be one tunnel from a central location, but almost Dodger Stadium, like with spokes on a wheel going out in every direction. That would be the only way to do it. I mean,
that would be good.
You know, people come in from all over the area. It isn't like let's drive into Hollywood, park, and take the tunnel. Driving into Hollywood is hell on earth, too. So it would seem to me, remember the idea that we talked about before of the aerial tramway, the gondola that would go?
Yeah.
I think like a half a dozen gondolas would make more sense. Like almost like you regard Chavez Ravine as a gigantic ski slope. But
you'd be surprised how many cities do that. And I would say this. Tell your son this. You reserve your skepticism not on so much as if they can build a tunnel.
Right.
Whether it would stay for a dollar.
No, it would never stay for a dollar. Why would they? For one thing, consider the most blatantly obvious. The Dodgers make an absolute fortune on parking. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the last thing they want to do is to see all of that good, tasty parking grift disappear. Miguel, what's the average taste for parking at Dodger Stadium? It's $20, right?
Yeah, I think it's like 20.
Yeah, it's 20. Okay. So you go in, you park in Hollywood, say, for $9.99, and it's a dollar to take the boring company's not-so-boring tunnel all the way to the ball game. You know, you have removed, even if the Dodgers own the lot in Hollywood, you've cut their profit in half, or you've cut their revenues in half. They're going to fight this tooth and nail any way they can. And also, it should be pointed out, Mr. Venom, the parking lot of Dodger Stadium is enormous, okay? Suppose they say, we are not going to allow the tunnel to come up through the parking lot. It's going to have to end on the outskirts of the lot, and we'll be running the shuttle buses at $15 a pop. Are you catching my drift here?
You're lucky if it'll be $14, $15 a pop. it'll be $15 a pop, and I guarantee you, from point A to point B, it's going to be loaded with every kind of ad, and they will find a way to sell you a concession on that gondola.
Did you see, I don't know if this is sort of a tangential story, but it's pertinent. I guess the Atlanta Hawks basketball team, who are quite possibly the most pathetic franchise in professional sports, won something like $175 million for the naming rights to their arena, what was Phillips Arena. And they're going to change it, I guess, to, I think, Emory Medicinal or Emory University or something. It's a college in Atlanta. Gave them $175 million. Naming rights to Hawks games. John, the Hawks can't even get $4,500 paid through the door. It was, I don't know what they're thinking, but that's what they got. They got $100 million.
At the rate that going, money-wise, you'll be surprised if they don't name it after the local chiropractor.
Yeah, or...
Or bail bondsman.
Yeah, I know. Like the hot dog stand or something. Sure. Yeah. No, yeah. I understand. I get that, but understanding how important the idea of raw capitalism is to this. Let's get back to point A. Musk seems to think he can build a tunnel through one of the most populous cities in the United States for 3 miles. And by the way, you can't go 3 miles in any direction to Dodger Stadium without going through very heavily inhabited neighborhoods. He thinks he can do this in 14 months and charge you a buck. Okay, so you are of the mind that this falls under the rubric of crapola.
That's putting it kindly, but yes.
Yeah, it's crap. Okay. So in reality then, what tree is he barking up?
Well, you know what's going to be interesting is he's saying he can do this in the next 14 months when he just signed a deal with the city of Chicago. And so he's got to start. If he's going to start there, will he have the resources to start in Chicago in 18 months like he promised?
Well, you know, they are selling 6,000 Teslas a week. You know, there's actually some positive cash flow coming in on his cars.
Yeah, but Tesla doesn't fund this.
It funds him.
Right.
You know, that's like saying, oh, those two piles of money are different. Yeah, one's in the left pocket, one's in the right, but it's on the same pair of pants, man.
Yeah, well, he's sleeping on the factory floor these days, and he's crying, and he's laughing.
He's crazy.
At the same interview.
Yeah, he's nuts. Yeah. He's bipolar disorder, yeah.
I'm waiting for the 21st century version of the Spruce Goose, or what was it that Howard Hughes was doing with the, you know, peeing in bottles and...
Oh, and
he
had fingernails that like were a yard long and stuff like
right.
that.
Right. All I know is just be aware that it may not happen if you see him walking around with a long beard, pajamas, and he's flanked left to right by Mormons.
Or he's walking around in pajamas babbling to himself so he doesn't have to pay back his investors like Vinny the Chin.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, there we go. So he's like Vinny the Chin. By the way, you know, I reference Vinny the Chin in one of my songs. I got to tell you, not once has anyone ever come up to me and gone, I can't believe you name-checked Vinny the Chin. All right, so you know Vinny the Chin is. I do. Miguel, who's Vinny the Chin?
I don't know.
There you go. See? There's John Q. Citizen. All right, he's giving us the cut sign. John, you want to hang on through the break?
Absolutely.
Very good. Southern California Live with Wendell. That's me, Johnny Wendell, on KEIB AM 1150. The Patriot, please stay tuned.
The guillotine is a killing machine. Size. That's what you see.
Southern California Live with Wendell. That would be me, Johnny Wendell, with my intrepid and erudite guest, Mr. Johnny Venom, who is a philosopher and trader in Illinois and our regular off-color commentator. Welcome back to the Patriots, Sarah.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
All right. Well, what we have been discussing is this tunnel to Dodger Stadium a pipe dream cooked up in the insane recesses of Mr. Musk's musty brain, or is it going to bear fruit and come to fruition? My 16-year-old son, not exactly, you know, a long-standing philosophical giant himself, but approaching it, asked me in the car the other day, Dad, do you think it's going to happen? And I said, I can't imagine in 14 months, 14 months to build a 3-mile tunnel through one of the most seismically active areas in the world.
No.
Let me ask you something, Mr. Venom. Have we ever discussed how long it took to build the subway line from downtown to North Hollywood?
We may have, but I don't remember.
Yeah, you want to know why? Because it was ages ago, because it took forever. All right. Admittedly, they won't have to bore through a mountainside on this one. There's a difference. But all the same, I'm thinking what he probably I don't know. Miguel, have we even seen a map of this would-be tunnel, where it goes?
No, I don't think anything.
No, has anybody have any idea what the route is, right? Nobody does.
No.
Here's a question for you.
No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Okay. Most likely, in reality, where is it most likely to go? The shortest distance between two points. If it's going to be in Hollywood, Mr. Musk is probably going, assuming this thing is ever going to see the light of day, Musk is going to ask the city if he can put his cute little tunnel wannel under Sunset Boulevard. Miguel, most logical place it would go would be Sunset, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, or Fountain. But, I mean, Fountain is a tiny, skinny little street. No, it's got to be a big, wide boulevard. Santa Monica Boulevard ends in Silver Lake, at least a mile away from the entrance to Dodger Stadium. Johnny, Sunset Boulevard goes right to the ballpark. I mean, it goes to the corner of Sunset and Vin Scully Avenue, or Boulevard, whatever it is. And it's a couple of blocks, and you're in the parking lot. Okay, you take a left at the, just past the shortstop, there you are. Boom, Dodger Stadium. So,
right.
That 3 miles, if they shut Sunset Boulevard down and bring in 5,000 people working around the clock, you might theoretically get it done in a year. But, Johnny, let me ask you this, as long as we're on theoretical questions and emergencies and all that stuff, right? The 10 freeway was knocked down in 1994, the Northbridge quake knocked down the 10 freeway. The 10 freeway between Santa Monica and downtown L.A. is the most traveled highway in America, okay? How long did it take them to get it back up?
Oh, my gosh. A couple months, no?
90 days, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but the thing is it was already there, you know, and the right-of-way was already there. So it's not the same thing. And it's up in the air. It's not in the ground.
Right. Well, this is. I just brought up Google Maps. Right. I'm looking at the topography. This thing.
Oh, okay.
Why don't they do it near the train station, the Chinatown Metro station? Go from there to along that line somewhere, all the way up to that mountain range.
No, it doesn't go in the right direction. What they're thinking, it's got to be like an east-west Paul Butterfield Blues Band 1966 thing from. I'm guessing something like. Around the corner of, I don't know, but I'm trying to think of where they would put a parking structure large enough. Maybe Sunset and Highland, Sunset and La Brea. Certainly not as far west as Sunset and Fairfax. They're not going to tear up that section of the road. But all the same, John, if you close Sunset Boulevard.
I know where.
Okay.
I know where.
Oh, you know what?
I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, you know I'm going to just knock it down, but okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you probably will. There's a large piece of land west of the Rio de Los Angeles State Park.
I don't even know where the Rio de Los Angeles State Park is.
Okay, it's in between, let's see here. It's in between, let's see. Is it?
Lived here almost 30 years. I don't even know what you're talking about.
All right, it's west. It's directly west of the San Fernando Road.
Okay, but that's in the wrong direction. He wants to build it from Hollywood going to Dodger Stadium. He doesn't want to build it north of the stadium or east of the stadium.
No, I'm talking about the parking structure.
Oh, the parking.
Oh, I see.
You want to park at the mouth of the tunnel, see? See, that's why I think this is crap. There's no place in Hollywood he can put up a parking structure for 7,000 vehicles. And also, you know, I distinctly recall that when I would take the train to see the Sox when I was a little kid, the Green Line going into Boston would run extra trains. They'd be jammed out the door, and you still only had a fraction of the. And mind you, these are trains coming in every direction, not just from where we were in the west, but north of us and south of us. and other train lines heading in the other direction. This is one tunnel heading in one direction to a ballpark twice the size of Fenway. Okay, so I don't know. I applaud the idea. Certainly, I applaud the idea as somebody who lives in Dodger Stadium's neighborhood and would love to see less traffic on the 81 games during the regular season that they're there. Because I got to tell you something, Johnny, that stretch of Sunset Boulevard from 5 in the evening till 7 and then from 9:30 to 10:15 is death. You just can't go anywhere. You can't get anywhere.
Right.
And all the on and off ramps on the freeway are brutal as well. I mean, as far as if he can do it, more power to him. I just don't see as it's a possibility, not at a dollar, not at $10. Because I keep thinking to myself, John, in my mind's eye, I can imagine, because I remembered what the streets looked like when they were digging them up to put them to the subway in,
right,
and stuff.
Right.
You got to go down a certain distance. Then you got to shore up the earth with wood. Then you got to flatten everything out completely. Then you got to make it seismically solid. Then you got to drop the tube in there over the tracks, you know, and you got to have all the electronic gear working. It's got to pass muster. I don't know, man. I can't imagine that going down in 14 months. I'd love to see
That's
it happen.
That's not going to happen. Not completed in 14 months. This thing is going to take probably, wherever you decide, it's going to take a minimum of 3 years.
Bingo, if not more. Because as you know, an awful lot of L.A. was built relatively quickly. Okay, and you may find some stretches of Sunset Boulevard are, well, we never knew this, right on top of a fault line. You know, they've discovered new fault lines in the last 25 years. So, you know, they could discover anything. They could discover gas pipes that weren't completely shut off. We have an earthquake and it caves in part of it for a while. You never know. Okay, we're getting the cut sign. You want to hang on through the break?
Absolutely.
All right. So the tunnel's a pipe dream. Southern California Live. You imagine the British and the French saying that about the tunnel? Southern California Live with Wendell. We'll be back. Stay tuned. They call his Southern California Live with Wendell. Johnny Wendell at KEIB AM 1150. We are the Patriot, L.A. With us for the next two segments is Mr. Johnny Venom, raconteur, racketeer, unconvicted racketeer, unindicted co-conspirator. The spirit of 76, not yet 77. Nice to hear from you again, sir.
You know, instead of the...
No. Mr. Talk Show Host wants a new topic.
Oh, my apologies.
Oh, that's
my
quite...
apologies.
And you know what? Because I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. Last word belongs to Johnny Venom on the subject of Musk's tunnel. Go ahead.
Instead of Dodger Stadium, have him work on the bullet train.
I know that he's working on his pneumatic tube. Believe me, man, if that thing happens, all that bullet train stuff is gone. If that pneumatic tube thing actually works and you could build one between here and Vegas, because you could put a tube like that up in, what, 8 months, if that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's almost 300 miles.
That's what he should focus on.
Yeah, I think that would, you know something? That would revolutionize everything. Because I got to tell you something, man. You make a trip from L.A. to Vegas or back. It's in between two enormous cities that didn't used to be enormous cities, okay? So the freeways that link, or the freeway, really, because there's only one, the 15 that links, and the 215 that link Vegas to L.A., it's not built for a city of 4 million people in a county of 11 million to a city of 1.3 million in a county of 3.5 million. Okay? It's not built for that. So if we had, I got to tell you, man, I got people that buy my books that live in Las Vegas. I got places I could play there, but I can't endure the idea of that, a 4-hour drive to go 260 miles, man. You know, because a 4-hour drive in California, you're talking, that's 300 miles, not 260. So that means you're not going very fast. And I'm being charitable, you know. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I, you know, I, the tunnel to Dodger Stadium, forget it. Uber and Lyft are going to end up taking care of most of the traffic problems or the parking problems, agreed?
Yes.
Okay, then we can move on. As long as we are on the issue of energy efficiency, let's talk SB 100. Okay, not Savage, okay. Not Savage Beating 100, not Succubus 100, not Silly Boy 100, but State Bill 100. Mr. Venom, Kevin DeLeon, my state senator, sponsored this bill, and it is awaiting signature. What does SB 100 portend?
Well, basically, it promises to make electrical engine, generation in the state of California 100% carbon free.
Yeah, in how many years?
14 years.
No, 27 years.
27 years, yeah.
Yeah, it's 27 years. So it sounds like a great, big, bold, amazing step, okay? And Vox tells us that we are committed to 100% clean electricity. All right. You'll notice they're fudging their words there. You'll still be able to buy a gallon of gas in Los Angeles. Okay. Okay. They claim it's a big deal. Enormous power and symbolism in 100%. This instantly sets a new marker for other to match. By this time next year, there'll be lots of ambitious states, provinces, or countries following our lead. It's important to understand it's not a big leap for California, a flash out of the blue, to step in the path. We have been headed in this direction, they claim, for more than 15 years. In reality, more than 40. All right. Emissions have been going down in automobiles steadily for many years in the state. But what they are looking at is the generation of electricity 100% renewable. Guess who is most?
No.
No.
100% clean with no carbon footprint.
Right. Okay. So here's a question for you. Who is in the main objecting to this?
Well, normally a lot of people who don't think it's doable. I don't think it's doable.
You don't
think it's doable
in 27 years?
No.
You're out of your mind.
Absolutely.
You're out of your mind. Why not?
100% is technically impossible. Number one.
Yeah.
The governor wants to push this other thing, SB, what is the one with the Regional Electricity Act or market?
Right.
Where he wants to form. If he does that.
What he wants is AB 813. Okay.
Right.
He wants us to be part of a regional Western market.
Okay. If you join that.
Yeah.
Which I don't think you should.
Right.
You can kiss this goal goodbye.
I know that.
Because then
we're at the mercy of Oregon, Washington, Nevada, and Arizona.
Number two, you need to have a reserve capacity. And technically speaking, everyone will tell you it can't just be renewables for that. You're going to have something. I can say 99%.
Oh, okay.
But not 100%. No, hold on here.
Okay.
But eventually there will be some sort of carbon footprint. If you define it even with how they're defining it in that act, okay, but, you know, if you're going to, for example, use a type of solar farm that has a generator in the middle,
right,
steam turbine,
right,
well, I'm sorry to say that, but to get the water into there is going to have a carbon footprint.
Yeah, initially, yes.
No, not initially.
Oh, completely.
Continuously.
Okay. All right. So SB 100, in reality, sets three targets. 50% renewable in, what's that, 8 years, 2026. 60% renewable by 30. 100% 2045. Okay. Notice the 100% carbon free. Okay. The first two targets are amendments that already exist. Okay. Governor Schwarzenegger back in 2008 set a target of 33% in 2 years from now. Okay, so we're moving along nicely. Johnny, I've got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
We know that out there by Mojave, there's the big old gigantic solar farm up on Interstate 395
right.
On the way to Mammoth. Yeah. Okay. Let's say that you built a couple more of those. And in between 2020 and 2030, you said to the state of California, let's rebuild the power grid from scratch. Okay. And Pacific Gas and Electric, which, by the way, had enormous profits in the last quarter, and they're the ones screaming the most about this, will be fighting that tooth and nail. okay? Because they see the writing on the wall like anybody else does. If we can have a gigantic solar farm that does this stuff, when the price of solar power comes down to the point where somebody can buy solar panels and put them on their own roof for $99, that's the end of us, you know, and eventually that will happen. Oh, yeah. I got a question for you. You got an iPhone?
Yeah.
You got an iPhone, don't you? What, do you have a flip phone?
I have an Android.
Okay. You have a handheld device of some kind, right, Mr. Trump?
Yes, I do.
All right, very good. Okay. The kind of memory that you are holding in your grimy little unwashed paw as we speak used to be stored in an entire office floor somewhere in the IBM building in Manhattan during your, not just mine, your lifetime. And you're what, 18 years younger than I am, correct?
I believe so, yes.
All right. Nobody would, if you told me, I'm going to get my iPhone is now out of my pocket. You can't see it. Miguel, am I waving my iPhone around like a lunatic right now? Is it up in the air like I just don't care?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. My iPhone contains more information now than was in wall after wall after wall of computer units 40 years ago. All right.
Yeah.
Now, what does that tell you? My iPhone cost me, what, $750? All right. How much do you figure all those computers at IBM or Hewlett-Packard or whoever was making computers back in the day? You know, how much do you figure that those, you're talking, what, $100 million worth of gear? You know, well, I'm at less than $800 in my hand. Now, you're going to tell me with a straight face, therefore, that solar power can't come down to the point where paneling that goes up on your house for $9,500 now goes down to $95 in 15 years.
I'm not denying that aspect.
Okay. What you're denying is storage.
No.
No.
No, not just storage.
Okay, wrap it up because he's giving me the cut sign. Go ahead.
Oh, there's volatility. See, what happens is you get these peak periods where they cannot shut down. Hold on.
Yeah,
they
I know.
Can't shut the thing down.
Right.
So it ends up costing them money. They need to work on the grid to disperse this excess energy. And they're right now not able to do it. And in 15 years, they need to change the whole grid.
Yeah.
But even at that point, you are still going to have to build more and more solar power. It's almost like you're going to have to get it outside of California.
Okay, fine. You know, there's plenty of room in Nevada and Arizona. Johnny, hang on through the break, will you?
All right, very good.
Southern California Live with Wendell. Johnny Wendell, the Patriot, KEIBM 1150. Please stay tuned. Tell me true. Southern California Live with Wendell. Patriot, KEIBM 1150. With Johnny Venom wrapping this bad boy up. Mo and Tawala. Tawala may be joining me. Mo is in France. So we will not be hearing from Mr. Yes, he is enjoying a well-earned vacation. Yeah, he's a hard-working man, you know. He's in France. Expect the postcards. Oh, that is such an old joke. Okay, Mr. Venom, sir.
Yes.
Fox Magazine says, what we're talking about here is SB 100, whether or not 100% no carbon footprint renewables by 2045. Fox Magazine says, despite what fossil fuel industry people will tell you, the targets have never been that ambitious. They really aren't. I mean, 60% by 2030 in 12 years, that's nothing. Okay. Just an increment above the trajectory that utilities are already on. Fact of the matter is, if you're a utility and you can get all of your power from the sun as opposed to having to buy natural gas from a natural gas company, you're pretty happy, generally. Okay. But people who take this as a criticism of the program miss the point. California is steadily raising its floor. It is looking higher and moving in a consistent direction that provides a stable, predictable, long-term business environment, which draws innovators and market risk takers. Market dynamism eats targets for breakfast. Okay. What they are saying, basically, Johnny, is in California, if you invent or design something that helps decarbonize electricity, somebody is going to buy it. Okay, that's the beauty of the free market in California is if you come up with something like that, it has a ready-made market for it because people are excited about it for whatever reason. You do agree with me on that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, Yeah. It's just that the focus needs to go back on the grid. The panels are one thing.
Right.
But you need to, on the economics of the grid itself, is completely not even up to date. And I have not seen anything. They just says, we're only going to buy if you reduce your carbon footprint. They haven't really laid out any plans for the grid, just the generation.
Well, you do know how the grid could be afforded and paid for, right? If California had a fuel extraction tax like every other state does, you know, like our liberal friends in Oklahoma have, for example, or our commie pals in Texas or our socialists in Louisiana. It's like they all have extraction taxes, you know, and that brings in an absolute fortune. You know, when oil and gas prices are down, the economies of those states not only take a hit because people get laid off, they lose their jobs, et cetera, ad nauseum, but the oil extraction tax drops, and the oil extraction tax pays for a lot of stuff in that state. We don't have that here. You know, 10% of the fuel that is, or 10% of the fossil fuel that comes out of the ground in the United States comes out of California ground. Why not have an extraction tax? It's suggested it would be $3.5 billion a year in revenue.
That's fine, but the government doesn't have to pony up a nickel, though. Yeah. Here's the thing, in California, the distribution of electricity is deregulated. Why isn't the state saying, all right, I want to see plans, I want to mandate local grids? I mean, really, we should be focusing on mini grids to handle the excess, okay?
Okay, but you do not understand the juggernaut that is Pacific Gas. Okay, we don't have that problem in L.A. We have municipal power. But in most of the rest of the state, PG&E has everybody by the, you know, the short and curlies, all right? So there is a bit of a problem there, all right? You are fighting a corporate monolith that consumer groups and government groups have been battling now for over 100 years.
Why haven't they been broken up?
They have power in this state, no pun intended, that is unmatched anywhere. Why haven't they been broken up? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I know that there have been provocateurs that have attempted to break them up for years and to turn them into smaller utilities. It hasn't happened. They have tremendous lobbying power in Sacramento, and were it not for L.A. County, they'd have the whole state pretty much. I mean, you know, it was interesting is back in 2000. When California was at Enron's mercy, you know, we weren't in L.A. We weren't having brownouts. Our utility bills were normal. You go to San Diego, you know, utility bill was five times higher than it was in L.A. And the power was going off at night all the time, you know. So it's become a very, very tricky situation. And as I said before, PG&E, on the one hand, would be more than happy to not have to buy natural gas from anybody. On the other hand, they realize that once solar power becomes cheap enough, people go, well, I'll just go right off the grid. You know, you think of like all of these little communities out in the desert, people just laugh. They go, I'll put up my own solar panels. Sun shines every damn day, 18 hours a day. You know, it's in the summertime, I get myself a nice battery storage situation. I'm set. That's what they worry about.
Well, when the battery technology catches up, that would be great. Until then,
yeah,
I think what you're going to need is these microgrids, because they can offload a lot of this excess power. And here's the thing I learned.
Yeah.
When you sent me this article.
Yeah.
The solar electricity situation in the city versus that desert situation you mentioned are completely different. When those solar cells collect electricity, it doesn't actually go into that home. It goes into the grid.
That's right.
You just right. So I mean, that versus the guy at the house, you know, he's able to power his own home in the desert.
Sure,
so,
but think of the guy in the. Okay, let's say you're out in the desert you're in Palm Springs or whatever, and people say, "What we're going to do from now on is we're going to tell PG&E to take a hike. We're going to start co-ops. All right, start their own little electric kibbutzes out there. You know, kibbutzes."
That's what I'm leading to.
Yeah, I figured you were. you know, because that's where it would go logically. Like you'd have a neighborhood association say, you know, we're sick of paying the, you know, $180 a month, $200 a month to PG&E. Let's, you know, and Jim's got this big sandy backyard he's not using for anything. He's volunteering to have the solar farm back there. If we throw in a little, boom, there you go. Johnny, we have just been waved off the air. He's giving us the cut sign. He's signaling that he wants a pepperoni pizza from Domino's. All right. We'll see you next week, okay?
Actually, I won't be able to do next week.
Oh, you won't do next week. Well, the hell with you then. All right. Well, have a good time anyway. Southern California Live with Wendell. Stay tuned for more. Bye-bye. Southern California Live with Wendell on KEIB, AM 1150, at 8.06 p.m. with Tawala Sharp, producer of The Mo Kelly Show, and my showmate this evening, as I was in for Mr. Kelly. Mr. O'Kelly is in France having a good old time. Tawala.
He's all over.
How do you think we fared this evening on KEIB?
I think we were good. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fairly ridiculous.
Yeah, out of control.
Yeah. Oh, we were off the
Johnny
chain.
Johnny only popped his lid twice.
Yeah,
right. No. To say he did two times. He went there. It was beautiful.
I flew into the ozone. What was it over the second time? I can't even remember. Oh, the idea of this is a fascinating story, Tawala. We got to let the Patriots listeners know about this. Apparently, high tech doesn't feel that it gets enough out of its employees as they are now in Silicon Valley. So they are proposing that in order to make their workers a little more imaginative. By the way, where'd we find this story anyway?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
I got to go look back.
Vice or something
it,
like that. Yeah. In order to make their workers more productive, they want to, Miguel, you're going to love this. In fact, Miguel's probably going to run up and get an application to the place as soon as he hears this story. They want to dose them with micro doses of LSD.
Yeah.
To be more creative.
Yeah.
Up in Silicon Valley.
Enhance their creativity.
Yeah. Go ahead. Tell them what we were talking about.
This is from The Guardian.
The Guardian, yeah, the UK Guardian,
yeah,
which is a legitimate newspaper.
Yeah. Yes.
It's not High Times or something like that.
No. Yeah. The first ever trials on the effects of microdosing LSD are set to begin in Silicon Valley.
Wow, there you go, Miguel.
A novel experiment launching September 3rd will investigate whether microdosing their staff, their computer staff, or whatever, their techs with LSD really does have benefits in enhancing their creativity. Okay, I'm serious.
And that's,
I feel you're laughing, but I'm just
And
serious.
It starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
September 3rd.
Yeah.
Miguel, you know, if you want to leave like early, you know, and head up north, you know, that's what I understand. You know, this could be, this is your dream job, right? You get paid to munch acid and hallucinate and pontificate on stuff.
And be creative. That's the key thing.
I mean, that
be
is
creative.
That, yeah. They're trying to open up your pineal gland. I don't know.
Yeah.
The notion of
your
this
third eye.
This is absolute madness. I mean, like, you know, they're using as little as 1/15 the tab.
1/15
tab.
That's like nothing.
That's nothing. That's not going to
That's a microdose.
It. That's a microdose.
It's a micro. This is a steady microdose.
They want to change your perception so that it frees your mind so you stop thinking along the patterns that you were thinking in. And what set me off when we were doing this segment next door at 6:40 was, here's a better idea. Why don't you let your workers sleep every so often? You know, not bust them down the peninsula from San Francisco to Silicon Valley from some overpriced crap hole hovel in the Mission down to Los Gatos or San Jose or wherever, and work them to death.
Yeah. How about that?
How about that? Why don't you let them work normal hours? Their brains will recharge as they tend to do, and they'll have new ideas, you know, as opposed to turning them into, Clydesdales on mescaline, you know, or whatever it is.
They've got the whole thing set up. Those who volunteer to take part will be sent a manual,
yeah,
which describes in great detail how to set up the gel capsule, containing the tiny pieces of blotting paper loaded with these small doses of LSD, and then it assigns you a period to take these doses over 4 weeks. It gives you an app so that you can read and monitor your progress.
Wow, you know, man, my app is turning pink. My app's got three heads. Oh, no, my app is singing the entire New Riders of the Purple Sage catalog to me in Swahili, man. Oh, I think I took all 15 doses at once, man.
Dude, I can see the code.
Oh, wow, I can see through the walls.
It's out there.
Jerry's ghost is playing Dark Star and Woodstock is happening all over again. Aw, come on.
Yeah, man.
Really, folks.
That's amazing.
By the way, you realize that every reference I made just sailed right over Miguel's head. He doesn't even know what I'm talking about. He has the vaguest idea what I'm talking about. See, that's the problem with being like an aged ex-hippie, is that my brain is still stuck back at the Monterey Pop Festival or something, you know? It's awful.
So you don't need the microdoses of LSD?
Oh, no, man. I'm already gone. I'm already circling Jupiter mentally as is. They could bring me up there to code. I don't know anything about it. I just like just, you know, jump around, you know. And I could be like Ron DeSantis, you know, and monkey around on the keys.
Oh.
Whoa.
Oh.
Well, that was another story we talked about. Phil, did you hear about this? Because you're a former proud resident of the state of Florida, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a governor's race in Florida. Ron DeSantis, a former congressman from the 1st District, is running against the mayor of Tallahassee, Andrew Gillum, to replace Rick Scott. You know, that Lex Luthor, bald, villainous guy who's running for the Senate. Okay. He's running against Bill Nelson. Okay.
Right.
So DeSantis, the day after he gets the nomination, says that Floridians don't want somebody like Andrew Gillum as governor because he might just do what to Walker?
Monkey it up.
Monkey up the state of Florida.
So we bury the lead. Andrew Gillum is black.
Yeah.
What?
Whoa. So we don't want the black man to monkey it up. You know, I understand that Ron DeSantis, it's too bad. You know, it's really, really too bad that, say, I wasn't Ron DeSantis's campaign manager because, you know, I'd probably exact a very high price working for him by my ethnic background. So there's no way on earth that Ron DeSantis could jay me down, you know. I went a long way for that one.
Here's the craziest part. Yeah. Is that DeSantis had the dirty nerve to say, well, I didn't mean anything racial by it.
Right.
But then authorized a robocall saying that we don't want a Negro.
A Negro.
What?
Can you believe that? A Negro.
In the office.
Do you realize that this is the guy
running?
He's
running governor.
He's running for governor in a state where one out of every five people in Florida is African American or has African American heritage. One out of every five of his constituents are going monkey up the state. You don't want it. It's like,
wow.
It's like no,
you don't
you're
want
no.
A Negro.
He doesn't want it.
Wow.
Golly gosh.
Ah, Phil, he took it back to like the 50s and beyond. This is hilarious.
Wow. What does he call all the people that come in from Puerto Rico that are destroyed by Hurricane Maria that live in Florida? Spaniards? Would I be considered a Hebrew down there by Ron DeSantis's people? I'm trying to think like a and if I happen to be from China or Korea or Japan, I'd be Occidental. See, that's a good one. See, you got the big three. You've got Negro, Spaniard, and Occidental here. It's like we're gonna party like it's 1949. Da 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 da. Don't elect the Negro. I was a Negro when I wrote this.
Anyway. Oh my God. Oh.
This is terrible. Okay.
This is what went down.
Where are we living now?
We live in Los Angeles.
No, I get it.
Praise the spirits.
Thank you. Yeah, but yeah.
You know.
This is the world. This is the world.
I can't.
No,
this
I mean
the world.
I mean, you know, I fully expect DeSantis to start running a commercial where, like, he, you know, runs over a symbolic watermelon in a pickup truck or something.
Yeah.
You know,
I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
Because that's just where it is right now. That's where it is.
And by the way, to the credit of the people of Florida, DeSantis's comments are not going over very well. Okay. Even praise with God. Republicans who are like, oh, yeah. Come on. You got to be kidding. And Gillum, his opponent. Gillum is a Bernie-crat. He's not a Clinton-crat. He's a Bernie. He's a lefty. Okay.
Yes.
Gillum has said to both the monkeying around thing and the Negro robocall, he said, look, we have to talk about issues. He goes, I'm not going to get down and get into the minutiae of this nonsense. Like, if this is what you want to talk about, I can't stop you. But frankly, we have a lot of problems. Do you know, for example, Tawala, that the west coast of the state of Florida, you can't go in the water. They have a massive outbreak of red tide.
Yes.
It's killing everything.
Everything
stinks
in the water.
Everything
in the water. Just, I think it was last week, there were like some 7,000 dead fish that washed up. 7,000 dead fish, among other just sea life. Turtles, get everything is dying out there.
Yeah, from red tide.
Yes.
You know, and you have DeSantis and his people saying, well, you know, offshore drilling might be a pretty good idea. And people in Florida are like, no, it's not. We don't want it. You know, what's fascinating about the people in Florida is that they all know now that if you live within 100, 150, 200 feet of the beach at this point, your property's likely to be gone in about 25, 30 years. They know and they're like, okay, are you going to start working on seawalls? Mm-hmm. Are we going to start doing something about the fact that if the planet heats up another couple of points, there won't be a Florida to live in from when my grandchildren are here? You know, that's what they care about. You know, this monkey around nonsense. It's like, to an angry 80-year-old snowbird from New Jersey or something. It's like, damn right. They love that, right?
Oh, yeah.
But his sons, daughters, grandchildren are like, no. Don't care. Not interested. You know, what is DeSantis going to do so that we don't, drown? All right? We don't want to drown, and we don't want the stinky red crap fouling our nostrils and wrecking our beaches and destroying our economy. What are you going to do? And none of this monkey or Negro stuff. We want answers. And what Gillum is saying is, all right, let's talk issues.
Yeah.
Enough crap, Ron.
Yeah.
I mean, really. Yeah. In your little district, your first district up there, DeSantis from the Panhandle or from up around Jacksonville. It's a very, very deep red area, right? He's been able to get away with this for years. Now he's in front of the rest of the state of Florida, and they're looking at him, and they're going, this stuff just doesn't fly with us. You actually have to have to do your job.
Yeah.
See?
And not only that, you have to look outside of your district because a large portion of Floridians are black.
Yeah.
Please understand that.
Yeah. Not to mention there is a sizable amount of mixed race people in Florida.
Yes.
Lots and lots of Haitian immigrants who are African Americans and Puerto Ricans as well. And they hear this stuff and they're like, we don't want to listen to this anymore. You know, are you going to do something? We work for a living. We pay taxes. Give us something besides this bullhorn. It isn't even a dog whistle, this bullhorn race crap, because we've had it.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people, you know, it's weird. I know a lot of people in Florida, a lot of them are politically conservative. And they all voted for Putnam, the other guy who ran against DeSantis. Putnam was a county commissioner. He was competent. He was capable. But no, they wanted somebody who gave them red meat, who stirred up the cruelty, hatred thing. They loved that. He won.
So they wanted someone who dances the 45 line.
That's correct.
Who does the 45 line dance.
Yeah. They wanted to go back to Uganda under President Idiot Amin. We have music there, sir, if you don't mind. There we go. Southern California Live with the man who never monkeys around, Johnny Wendell. We'll be back.
You can dye your hip pink, paint skulls
Jesus.
On your toe.
This segment is so short, which is like as long as you always love me, playing till the bottom of the hour. But we won't. Southern California Live with Wendell at 8:25 with Tawala. Twala, you are deeply engrossed in something. What is it?
No, you're right. California Love is his biggest record, tied with How Do You Want It. We're talking
right.
about Tupac.
We're talking about Tupac Shakur's biggest record. Yes. Not his best record. In my humble opinion, nothing tops I Ain't Mad At You. That to me was his high point.
Mm.
It was. I mean, it was him. That was him as a soul artist, not solo soul. Yeah. You know, that came directly from his heart. I think a lot of the rest of his stuff was, you know, he was very, very fluid, quick, rhythmic, you know. But I Ain't Mad At You was, that one had heart to me.
Yeah,
yeah, that was my favorite. What about you?
Dear Mama.
Dear Mama is,
Dear Mama.
Is beautiful. Yeah. Yeah.
Dear Mama, every time I hear it, I swear, it reminds me of my mom and a lot of what she went through, growing up with her and raising me and my brother.
Because in a lot of ways, your upbringing was not entirely different from Tupac's and Betty Shabazz.
No.
It was close.
Yeah, there are a lot of similarities in the paths, you know,
right.
and going to become a big rap star, but just in who our parents were and in the movement,
right.
and where we were at that time, very, very similar. Very, very similar.
You met Tupac.
Yeah, a few times.
And what was your opinion of him?
Quiet guy. So I never understood all the loud, you know, braggadocious, you know, death row talk. I never understood any of it because when around him, when the posse wasn't around,
right.
very quiet, very kind of introspective. His eyes were always moving, not in a nervous, skittish way, but kind of in like I'm taking everything in kind of way.
As an observer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. And he, it's like... I got to be in the studio with him one time when Johnny J was producing music for him, rest in peace. And just when he came in, he was just very quiet. And the room kind of got quiet. And he was kind of like, you know, hey, you know, hey, everybody. And he kind of was just in the back, just kind of like tracks are playing. And he was just kind of like taking it in. Every once in a while, he would say something. But I did notice that when his people got there, you know, he started getting a little more amped up. And it was odd. It was just kind of like...
So he played to his audience in a
yeah.
manner of speaking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I guess because everyone
else. He'd front if they were around.
Yeah. I mean, because we were all kind of quiet and just chilling. And so I guess he was quiet and chilling. But then when his people came around, it was all, yo, we got the weed and we got this and that. And this thing started getting hype. And then he started getting amped up. And, you know, most of the people, I was like, all right, well, we're out. Have fun.
We're good.
We're cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Those were different times. I mean, you were talking about an industry that was burgeoning. You were talking about people could actually get paid for the music they recorded.
True.
You know, and you were talking about a situation where you had competing cliques that were armed and dangerous and determined to do each other harm.
Yeah.
You know, and ended up in the deaths of the two great voices of that decade.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, to me... Maybe it's because it's being from the East Coast and not being from California that Notorious B.I.G.'s stuff tends to touch me a little more, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I like his style more.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I like the openness of it. I like the spaces. I like the fact that he isn't he allows the meaning of what he says to sink in without pounding it into you.
Gotcha.
He was more subtle. He was more of a musician.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This all comes from the fact that off air – Miguel had no idea who did All Eyes on Me.
That's
and
where
that
this
was shocking to almost all of us in the room. Phil kind of was like, yeah, I mean, I can see he didn't know that, but
no,
like I was beside myself.
He didn't
myself.
Know All Eyes on Me. He didn't know three sublime songs, all of which were hits while he was alive. There's nothing we can do about this. Oh, that's your cue to go and see your children, Tuwala. Thank you for a wonderful night at KFI. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
It. All right, when we be back, we'll be back. The Patriot. Yeah, Southern California Live with Wendell at 8:36 in Los Angeles. Thanks to Tuwala. We did a bang-up show next door together, KFI. Thanks to Phil, the board operator. Miguel, the producer, whose social life is featured in the next segment by popular demand from Miguel. Yeah. Two big old funerals this week, huh? Two huge funerals. Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, 76, Detroit, Michigan. John McCain, 81, Senator, Arizona, to be buried in Arlington Naval. Two enormous send-offs for, to put it mildly, larger-than-life personalities. Two absolutely remarkable Americans in every way, shape, and form. One was the paragon of a type of music that rose out of the church in the early 60s, late 50s. I think soul music was pretty much invented by Ray Charles at the end of the 50s. Took it out of the church, took gospel songs, turned them into pop songs. Sam Cooke, he was a gospel singer. He became a pop singer. Benny King, learned in the church, then on the corners of the streets in New York City, became a paragon of soul himself. Then, of course, all the great ones, James Brown, Wilson Pickett, Sam and Dave, my favorite, Otis Redding, and Aretha and all the girl groups. But Aretha, she was special. She was a blowtorch. She had power. And it was pretty funny to see some of the acts pay homage to her, especially Chaka Khan. Miguel, did you see Chaka Khan's little brief turn at Aretha's funeral?
I didn't watch it.
Oh, it was funny. She was fanning herself. And on her side of the fan were the lyrics of the song she was singing.
And I think that's smart.
Yeah, she no iPad. You know, no teleprompter. She just had it on the back of her fan. One of the first things I did when I moved to L.A., 1989, there were these jam nights at the Shamrock. It's called the Cheetah now. It's in Los Feliz. And there was a jam night on Sunday nights, and I, you know, kind of toddled over there. I think I was living in Hollywood at the time, maybe. Maybe I was still living with my grandpa in Koreatown. I don't know. And anyway, I went. It was the first few weeks I was here. And was, you know, going to play, brought my guitar. And Chaka Khan shows up. There's a little bar. She wants to sing. So she's Chaka Khan. We're going to defer to her. So she lines us all up, and she says, "You're going to sing these two songs with me. Can you sing backup?" She looks at me, and I go, "Yeah, sure." So me and everybody else, we got up, and we sang Respect, Aretha's version of the Otis Redding song. And we sang Signed, Sealed, Delivered by Stevie Wonder, who also was at Aretha's service. And, she was wonderful. She was like a tornado, a little tiny woman with gigantic hair extensions. You know, she was very exotic, and she was very nice. But, you know, Aretha Franklin's funeral, it's like almost like saying goodbye to an era. You know, that kind of thing. Or something rises organically up and becomes this monstrous sensation and phenomenon in popular culture. I don't think that can happen anymore. I think that because of social media and the internet, anything that is really brilliant doesn't get a chance to matriculate, you know, in solace or hidden. I think of, like, you know, because as I've said many times, and you know this because you know me after 16 years on the air from being in the first wave of punk rock, that the kind of music that we were playing wasn't commercially acceptable. So we were allowed to develop our own thing under the radar in the little clubs that we played in, like CBGB's in New York and The Rat in Boston and Max's in New York and out here, the Starwood or the Mabuhay Gardens up north, you know, the Mask in Hollywood. You know, we weren't deemed, America couldn't do anything with, no, they weren't going to buy stuff that we were making. So we were allowed to develop under the radar, you know, and develop your own sound and your own act and your own personality. But social media right now, it's like if I was 21, 22 years old and we started playing now, somebody makes a video of it, it goes up on YouTube, it can be seen, you know, in the South Sudan, it can be seen in Australia, it can be seen by everybody. It's either thumbs up or thumbs down right out of the gate. It's just that's not healthy for art. And same with Aretha Franklin. I'm not saying Aretha Franklin's a punk rocker. It's just that, you know, she was a jazz singer when she was on Columbia, you know, and because she was a famous reverend's daughter. She did get some attention, but her records didn't sell. And they moved her over to Atlantic. She was under the guidance of Jerry Wexler, the great R&B producer, and he brought her down to Muscle Shoals in Alabama, and they cut I Never Loved a Man and Do Right Woman, and she just had this slew of hits for 15 years. Just, you know, she made it live through the disco era. She made it into the era of soundtracks. She never lost it, you know, but she was allowed to develop. She was a gospel singer, then a jazz singer. She was allowed to find her voice, you know. The world of politics, not quite the same. I you know, it's not art. It's a different situation. You can never make an analogy from music or writing or painting or anything, or making films or acting with politics. Politics is its own animal. And, you know, you've got to be ready to go from the get-go to be acceptable to the masses. And Senator McCain was, he was the real deal as a politician. He commanded a great deal of respect, as was evidenced by his ceremony. And I couldn't help wondering as I was watching this, bits and pieces of it, when I was watching Barack Obama, Joe Lieberman, George W. Bush, Joe Biden, other dignitaries. One sense that I got, as much as they were florid in their prose about the honorableness of Senator McCain and, you know, the unspeakable tragedies that he lived through in his life, that he transcended somehow, they liked him personally. You read me on that, they liked him personally. You could tell when Joe Biden was eulogizing John McCain and he said, you know, I'm a Democrat, he was a Republican, we were like brothers that did not agree. He said, but he was my brother, he was my friend, I loved him. You know, and Barack Obama and George W. Bush, you know, two men that had defeated McCain, were of the same. They liked him. Joe Lieberman, same thing. You know, I liked him. He was a likable person. He did some things that made some people incredibly angry. He had a very short fuse. But he was a likable guy. He had friends. He went out a champ. He went out like I would want to go out, like everybody would want to go out. They would want to go out where... Where what is your recollection of him? What is your recollection of her? Well, I liked them. He was all right. You know, he was a good guy. He was my friend. I'll miss him. She was wonderful. I'll miss her. The world is a weaker, sadder place because she isn't here. That's what you want. You know, you don't want your accolades to be whatever they are. You want to go out knowing that you loved and you were loved. That's what's important. And so I see this stuff that comes out in the wake of McCain's funeral, where a lot of the supporters of the president, of Trump, are going on and on about how every one of these eulogies was a left-handed swipe at Trump. You know, and I went over the transcripts of these speeches and they didn't mention him. What they talked about was honor, and what they talked about was civility, and what they talked about was comity, and what they talked about was country before party, and what they talked about was getting along and being civilized. That's what they, you know, what they referred to when they talked about Senator McCain is that he was a principled person. He had honor. He made mistakes, but he was an honorable human being who believed that America was a great country and that he was proud to serve it. You know, I believe America is a great country. I love it here. You know, I can't, you know, and I every so often I think, you know, I should live in another country before I die. You know, I think that, you know, to be a more well-rounded human being, maybe live in Europe, and I think about it, or Australia or New Zealand. I got relatives in New Zealand or in Korea or wherever, or Italy, you know, maybe something exotic, like somewhere in Africa for a year or two. And I think, I miss America too much. It's such a great place. You know, we have such a unique way of looking at things. And so when Meghan McCain said, father didn't believe in making America great again, it would never stop being great. And all the Trump people took that personally as an affront. See, she's attacking him. Above and beyond the fact that she'd be within her rights to do so, given that the president spent an awful lot of time denigrating John McCain, she didn't. He wasn't mentioned once. Donald Trump wasn't in the room. His daughter was in the room during the funeral, texting away, it should be pointed out. She's on film playing with her iPhone. It's pretty sad. But all over social media, you see people who are saying, well, you know, the whole ceremony was an attack on Trump. And I think to myself, you sad little people, your entire worldview, your entire universe revolves around this weird messianic fervor that you have for a politician. And make no mistake about it, Donald Trump is a politician like any other politician. Not different. The idea like, well, he never held elected office, or that's a lot of bull. Nobody cares about it. He's a politician. Politicians tell people what they want to hear in order to get elected. That's what he did. More power to him. He's the president of the United States. He was legitimately elected. But the fact of the matter is that when you see building somebody up in death as a sideways way of knocking someone in life, I got to tell you, pal, you've got no life. You're a fool to think that way. You're wasting your energy. You're sad. You're pathetic. You're pitiful. Because you are identifying with somebody who doesn't give a damn about you at all. No politician does. I'm not saying that because I like or dislike any politician. It's just a fact of life. I would not claim that the people that I voted for had a deep personal connection to Johnny Angel Wendell. I know they don't. And you know what's more important than that? I feel that they don't. So when it comes to a politician like John McCain, who I actually did vote for once, I did. I voted for McCain in 2000. He was a man that was complex. He had his pluses and minuses. He believed in certain things that I thought were absolutely repugnant. The man never met a war he didn't like. I can't abide by something like that. He believed war was a first resort. I believe it should never be a resort at all. I'm funny that way. But he believed what he believed. He made eloquent, persuasive arguments for what he believed. He commanded and demanded respect, and he got it. And if you think that that's somehow a knock on Donald Trump, what I just said, y'all are crazy. Understood? A little noise, if you don't mind, sir. Thank you. Miguel's Social Life, such as it is coming up next. Stay tuned. Oh yeah, Southern California Live with Wendell at 8:56. It's Miguel's Social Life up in his room. Miguel, sir.
Hello.
I understand that the SS Miguel is about to dock in port fairly soon. Am I correct in this?
Yes, it is.
What is this momentous occasion in your social life, sir?
Well, tomorrow, this girl that I know through from working all these festivals, I consider her a friend.
Yes, she's your friend.
Yeah, she's very nice. She's going to come over to my place to watch a movie.
Do you have the film picked out?
Yeah, it's an anime film called Your Name. It's the highest grossing anime film of all time.
I see.
It's really good, by the way.
You've seen it already?
Yeah.
Has she seen it already?
She's seen like a little bit of it. So this is how it happened. She posted something on Instagram of her watching the movie.
Yeah.
And I asked her like, oh, what'd you think of it? She didn't end up, finish watching it cause she had issues with like her internet. We were just talking a little bit from then on.
Okay.
And then I brought up the random question like, oh, hey, do you smoke? And she was like, yeah. Referring to weed.
Right.
And,
which is legal in California.
Yeah.
So we can talk about this on the air.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then I offered her like, hey, like, why don't we just like smoke, chill, and then watch the movie? That at first I was like purely platonic, you know, or I mean, it will always.
It was written to appear that it was purely platonic.
Yeah, those are my intentions. It's just purely platonic intentions.
I see, of course.
And then.
And you're going to sell me a bridge after this, right?
Yeah.
Swampland. Okay, go ahead.
But anyway, she brings up, oh yeah, we should also drink and get drunk together. And I'm like,
well, I can't do that. You can't drink right now, though.
I can't, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the reason why I think she's, you know, maybe it could be something more is that, okay, so I live in Pasadena.
Yeah.
She lives in Redlands.
So if she comes to your place and she drinks, you'll be in no condition to drive back to Redlands on the other side of San Bernardino, correct? That's how your brain is working?
Well, I mean, on top of that, like, personally, I wouldn't drive all the way to Redlands just to, like...
see a film.
Yeah.
So you... believe... No. So you believe that she has an ulterior motive?
I think so, at least. I think it's probable.
You would describe her as a reasonably nice person?
Yeah, she's really nice.
Oh, okay. So that'll be fine. You'll have a fun old time.
I mean, either way, like, getting high and watching a movie is a good time regardless.
Ah, I see. So, but in the back of your head, you're thinking to yourself, there should be some sort of physical payoff here in order for me to reach peak ecstasy, in a manner of speaking.
Yes, you put it in perfectly.
Yeah, no, I'm remarkably eloquent for an old man whose faculties are fading rapidly by the hour. Yeah, that's true. I do understand, as Steve Miller, who you've never heard of, would say, the pompetus of love. So, yeah. Well, good luck. Bon voyage on the good ship FWB. This is KEIB the Patriot. We'll see you next week. Bye.